Like a call to order the work session for March 1st, government ethics training.
All right. Hi, everyone. So I'm Mary Bridget Smith, city attorney, and we're going to hopefully more discussion than just lecture on public ethics for public officials. We thought it would be a good idea to get before you as some of the planning commissioners are newer, and it's always good to have a refresher about this kind of stuff. I have two pieces of materials for you. One with the Springfield Planning Commission government ethics update and the bullet points. Just has some general information about public ethics in terms of conflicts of interest, use of position, gifts. Those are sort of the high points of and the main points of ethics for public officials. One page on there also has some resources. I would encourage you, if you ever come across an ethics question, you can contact my office directly and speak with one of the people who works on the city attorney contract, or you can go to Brenda. Another good place to look is the Oregon Government Ethics Commission website. It has really good information. They have a public official ethics guide that you can download. They have an anonymous, you can ask questions, you can email or talk to somebody, and they're really responsive. So I really think there is a lot of good information out there. In terms of public records and public meetings, the Ethics Commission actually regulates executive sessions for public meetings. This Planning Commission doesn't do executive sessions. Those are particular public meetings that are held for certain reasons, and they're close to the public. So for example, when the city is contemplating purchasing property, when we're looking at other issues in terms of litigation and other specific reasons, they'll have a closed meeting. It's still technically a public meeting, but the public's not invited. The Planning Commission doesn't hold those kinds of meetings, so you don't have to kind of go through the hoops that you go through for those kinds of meetings, which is good. But you do have public meetings, and you do make really important decisions for people in terms of site plan review and permit, your quasi-judicial land use hearings. And then, of course, like the action that you'll take tonight, where you'll evaluate a legislative package of code amendments and then move a recommendation onto the Planning Commission. That's also your other role. So at any rate, feel free to call us anytime if you have questions. Even if you think, oh, I don't know, you know, maybe, then just call us, no problem. Also, we included some frequently asked questions that we get often about ethics for public officials. I think the bottom line I always think about with this is that, you know, the state understands that people are volunteers, and particularly in smaller communities. So the idea that you're in, you know, for example, Commissioner Nelson, you're in real estate, well, then it would make sense that you're on the Planning Commission. Doesn't mean you can't participate in Planning Commission action. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's that idea that they want to encourage people to participate and volunteer. So I guess I want you to feel like at the end of the day, you can do your work. So, public records. You know, we always sort of preach about public records. So the idea with those laws, those sunshine laws, those freedom of information laws, are that your records are open to the public generally unless they fall under specific exemptions. And those exemptions have to do with like personal discipline, personal privacy concerns, that kind of thing. But generally what I would, you know, we always sort of counsel people is that when you are drafting an email on behalf of the Planning Commission and your role as a Planning Commissioner, you know, you just got to be comfortable that it could be on the cover of the paper. And then you know that you're okay to do it. In terms of your roles as Planning Commissioner, something to think about is to be very careful if you're emailing one another, because it's this idea that you can have a serial meeting or a meeting via electronic means is a very real thing that could happen. So I would encourage you really to avoid emailing one another. Actually, I think that's kind of the best practice. And then discuss what you're going to discuss at the meeting in an open session, I think, is the cleanest way to handle it. If Brenda emails you, right, and she's like, here's the agenda, and she asks you a question, totally get back to her. That's no problem. But this idea that maybe you guys might start some kind of conversation that will grow over time and start including people and replying all, and then pretty soon you don't know who's on it or who's seen it. And there was a recent case out of Lane County. It wasn't just that, you know, we always used to tell people, oh, don't reply all. Because if you are discussing something and you have a quorum, and it looks like you're deliberating to something, then you've kind of had this meeting, right? Maybe on accident, but you sure haven't had it in the public view. Well, a recent Lane County case also found that it wasn't just this idea of reply all. It was also, you know, emails that were sent close in time, you know, and in between the administrator and some board of commission, some commissioners. So from those emails, they were able to piece together what looked like to the court as deliberation. You know, so it would be like a couple commissioners emailed the administrator, the administrator emailed one of the commissioners and another commissioner. I mean, and you know, not intending to try and sideswipe things, but it really didn't look good when you print all those emails out and look and see who's actually copied, how close in time they are, what they're talking about. And even some of the text, you know, was pretty innocuous stuff, but sort of gave the idea of deliberating towards a decision. So it's just something to be thinking about, I think, in terms of how you conduct business as a planning commissioner, which I think is really different from how we do, you know, our personal and business lives, people you know all the time. So, but I would still caution you about that. And then the last part is this idea of an impartial tribunal. So you're in a really unique position as planning commissioners. You make decisions for quasi-judicial land use hearings. So those are the hearings where the city attorney and staff will go through the procedure, and you're talking about a specific piece of property and a specific permit or application for that property. And that's what can be appealed to LUBA. That's when you're making the decision. The thing that's critical about those cases is that you're building the record upon which that decision is made. So that's one thing. So we'll have some procedure about who can talk when and how long they can talk for and getting stuff in the record, and once the record's closed, not getting other stuff in the record, that kind of thing. So you'll always sort of see that kind of back and forth, and particularly if we have a joint meeting that gets even sloppier, I think, or not sloppier, but even more complicated, I would say, like if we have one with the county planning commission or another city planning commission. The other issue, though, with quasi-judicial hearings, I think, is just remember that people are entitled to an impartial decision maker, and that has those three aspects: ex parte communication, conflict of interest, and bias. So that means that when somebody gets up to the podium and they put an application in, what they're entitled to is this impartiality. Ex parte contacts are the kind of contacts that would occur outside of the record. You know, that's the classic, like, run into the developer at lunch and talk to her about the project thing, and use that as the basis for your decision instead of the criteria and instead of the information you hear at the hearing. You can cure ex parte contacts. Site reviews are not ex parte contacts, but I think it's fine to say, and I've seen planning commissioners say often, hey, I know we're talking about this thing on Main Street. I live very close to there. I drive by there all the time. Or after I got the application, I went and looked at it. That's totally fine, and I think that's appropriate to disclose. Bias is a little trickier. It is really, you know, that your personal judgment, that you cannot make the call because your personal feelings interfere with what you need to do. Bias can be difficult to prove. So if someone were to try and call you on bias, that would be hard, and they would do that at the Land Use Board of Appeals after the decision's been made. Some examples of this are sort of the classic, like Walmart's going to move into your neighborhood and you were actively against it and participated in a citizen group and went to protest, and then were a planning commissioner and made a decision about this store coming in. So it's those kinds of actions that I think really go to that. And then the last is the conflicts of interest. So the conflicts of interest is similar to the actual or potential conflicts of interest that we talk about under public ethics. And that's that idea that you're personally going to financially gain or avoid a detriment by allowing something to happen by your vote, right? So that's an actual conflict of interest. A potential conflict of interest is, well, you could benefit from it. So that's more attenuated. You declare conflicts of interest. You can recuse yourself, and certainly if you have an actual conflict of interest, that would be the best course. However, if we don't have a quorum, you can still participate in the decision. You can vote in the decision. You're not supposed to discuss it. So we don't have this appearance of fairness doctrine that other states would have, where if it just doesn't look good, you don't participate, particularly if we don't have a quorum. If you do have a quorum and you want to recuse yourself, that's fine. And I know, for example, Commissioner James and I have worked through some issues when it's been school district and Willamalane projects that have come before the planning commissioner. And we've tried to work through what would be the best way for him to approach that in terms of, you know, what's his involvement? Is this a Will Amelie board member, or is it an employee of the school district, that kind of thing. If you run into that kind of issue, we can handle it before, or we can take a break at the hearing, figure it out, and then get back on the record and handle it. So, you know, it could be that you walk in one day and you're like, oh my God, that's my neighbor who's, or whatever, and then we can, it's no problem. You can talk to us about it and we'll get you through it. So I thought what we would do is, oh, and then one more thing, and you guys were sort of talking about this before everyone got here. So SEI filings are online this year, so no more paper filings. And this is the first year. So if you go to the OGIC website, I think they have like a YouTube video that takes like 10 minutes to get you through it. I couldn't watch the whole thing because I was like, okay, done. But they have a video. I think some people tried to log on today, weren't real successful, it sounded like. So still working the kinks out. You have till the middle of April, but no more paper forms. And you probably used to get them from Brenda or Amy Sella or so. So that is a change from
did everyone get that email?
Yes.
I have a question about the method. I went ahead and registered with them and got all that, and then it said something about you'll receive another communication from us for your filing, and I haven't gotten that yet. So
when did you do that?
I probably did my registration 4 days ago.
Oh, okay.
It was just shortly after she sent the email.
Okay, all right.
I'll talk to Amy tomorrow.
Yeah, okay. See, you're the first group that I've known that I've talked to that's tried to do it.
Yeah, so that wasn't a problem.
I'll communicate with you.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, change there. No more paper form.
Brenda, I'll need to contact you. My password stopped working, so I'll get with you.
All right. So let's see. The last three pages are some hypotheticals. I thought we could just run through these for a few minutes and hopefully get to a little more of a discussion instead of me just babbling with you. So the first one is about hypothetical one. The mayor hosts the State of the City address and asks you to attend. After the mayor's speech, there's a reception with food and beverages. Although the event is open to the public and for free, almost everyone who attends is a government employee or a volunteer. Do you violate ethics laws if you go to the reception and eat several plates of food?
It's a lot of food.
I'm just saying, you're there, you might as well.
You can only have one plate of food. Six carrots, Steve.
Yeah, only heavy hors d'oeuvres. Oh, okay. No, no. So the answer here is that you're certainly welcome to participate. You're in your role as a planning commissioner. If there's food there, incidental, that's totally fine. If the city, let's say, purchases a table for a chamber breakfast and has planning commissioners come and you're there as your role as planning commissioner, you go to that breakfast as well. I think the problem you run into, and it happens more really for employees, I think, public employees, is like you go to a conference and you have some ability to have some kind of meal that you wouldn't have but for your job. That kind of thing is, I think, more tricky. But in your circumstances, when you're appearing as a planning commissioner at some kind of event where there's food or drink, feel free. The city of Springfield, Illinois has decided to host the convention of all planning commissioners for all cities called Springfield. All of you have decided to attend, of course, and the city of Springfield, Illinois has offered to pay for your airfare and your hotel. Can you accept the offer? So you can accept this offer if this other ever hypothetically comes past, because you can go for conventions and trainings. Again, you're in your role as a planning commissioner, and this is being offered by another public entity. So if you ever get a chance to do that, you can. Let's see. Number three, your spouse's father owns real property in the city. It's zoned community commercial, and it's undeveloped. He's been contacted by some marijuana business advocates who are interested in leasing his property to build a retail store. You are discussing and voting on a recommendation regarding development code amendments at this planning commission meeting regarding retail marijuana sales on property zoned community commercial. Can you participate in the discussion and can you vote on the development code amendments?
Potential conflict of interest?
Yeah. So you have a potential conflict of interest, right? A maybe, right? Maybe, I forget the facts, a son-in-law, gonna spouse's father owns the property. Maybe he's going to do business with somebody who might have that kind of store there. but it is not an actual conflict of interest. So your spouse's parent is a relative in this circumstance. You could, I think you could participate it, but you need to disclose that you might have this, you might have this issue. So it's different then, and if you look at, you know, the next issue would be, I live across the street from an undeveloped tract of land. A developer whom you're acquainted with has proposed to build a large residential development. It will require public hearing and approval. The other day, you're out watering your lawn, the developer's out there, you got into conversation, found out that he's had a study done that will substantially raise property values for nearby homes if the area gets built. At the Planning Commission meeting to approve the master plan, can you participate in the discussion or vote in the master plan? So this would be, again, a potential conflict of interest because approving the master plan could raise your property values. I think that's, you know, that's a little more attenuated, right? I mean, he's got this study, it could raise your values. I think you would really, if you really had an actual conflict of interest, it's like, you definitely would get money from this. And I can't think of it in the circumstances of this hypothetical, but it's if you got, you would get the money or avoid the economic harm.
Wouldn't this also be ex parte communication?
For sure, good point. And so again, you're gonna wanna be saying, hey, by the way, talk to so-and-so and talk about that at that beginning of the hearing. Great point. If you did have an actual conflict of interest, but we weren't gonna recuse, you weren't gonna recuse yourself because we needed you for a quorum, again, this is a situation where you don't discuss, but you can vote. So. And then let's see. Number five, your niece is a local volunteer firefighter. A family get together recently, she shared some of her thoughts on the proposed development code amendments related to marijuana uses. Specifically, she shared some ideas about restricting the use of butane to make hash oil because of the explosion risks. When you have a hearing on the SDC marijuana code amendments, do you have to disclose the conversation you had with your niece?
I wouldn't think so.
Nope, yeah. You don't. So people can talk to you about all kinds of stuff. Doesn't mean you need to, especially this kind of hearing. This is what would be called a legislative hearing. You're just having a conversation with her. You could bring it up. I mean, you could ask about it. It could trigger a question in your mind. Well, maybe we should look at that, but it doesn't mean you have to bring it up in terms of disclosing the kind of thing you would disclose in a quasi-judicial hearing. And, you know, you're going to hear stuff. I mean, that's the thing. When you're a decision maker, and particularly, like, look, we have this big policy issue of how to handle marijuana locally coming up, right? I mean, all of us have had lots of conversations about this because it's such a change. So it makes sense that you would have had some discussion about it. Last one. So you received the agenda for an upcoming Planning Commission meeting and an email to all Planning Commissioners. One agenda item is approving the Springfield Development Code Amendments. You also have a full agenda that night, other controversial items. You'd like to agree in advance to approve the SDC Code Amendments. Then all you have to do on the meeting is vote. Can you send out an email to the Planning Commissioners explaining what you'd like to do and to see if anyone has any concerns in order to streamline voting? What do you think?
Absolutely.
Please tell me no. Okay. So, no, and this is a, you know, a pretty big example of this kind of thing, but this, I think what happens is it's more inadvertent. People start talking by email and then it looks like they're doing stuff. Just remember that, you know, in your role as public officials, you do stuff in the public. So you bring it up at an open session. I mean, that's how it goes, and that's fine. But anything that you think, if you're deliberating on this, am I thinking about this, it's something that needs to be in an open session. So that's all I have. If anybody has questions about anything about ethics or sort of any miscellaneous stuff about public official stuff, I'm happy to chat with you. No? Well, thanks. We'll try and probably, we'll get back to you. I think we want to try and do it once a year, probably. And then if there's any big change in the law, I'll send you a memo or something. But we're not anticipating anything happening in this coming session, so.
Good.
All right. Well, as always, thank you. Get ready for next door.
Ready to adjourn it? Adjourn the work session.
Is there a test?